You're listening to episode 124 of the FitzPro podcast, and today is Sunday, and that means that everyone in my neighborhood mows their lawn, and apparently we don't have great insulation. So if you happen to hear someone mowing the lawn in the background, I apologize. If I could live on my 5 acres and have a soundproof office, I would, but we're not there yet. So currently, you are going to get podcasts from my rental, which also means that you might get some lawn mowing in the background. But in all seriousness, I am very excited for today's episode. It is a topic that I have been asked about a lot. It's a topic that I've explored a lot myself in my 10 plus years of being a trainer in person and in the online space, and that is whether to take part in, use, and program what is currently or has been deemed kind of unorthodox movements or approaches to movement. So I'm stoked for this one. If you're a trainer or a trainee, it's going to apply to you. So without further ado, let's dive in. The FitzPro podcast is your no BS approach to seeking out truth in the world that is online health and fitness. You'll see through the lens of the trainer, the trainee, and the entrepreneur. I'm your host, Annie Miller. Certified strength and conditioning specialist, entrepreneur, lover of sleep, lattes, and dinosaurs, aka not your average Fitzpo. And my aim is to help you grow your mind, body, and business through knowledge and authenticity so that you too can become a Fitzpro. If you happen to be here for the business side of things, I encourage you to check out my free on-demand workshop, Your Biz Your Way, 3 steps to build a profitable online health and fitness business. That is what I do. That is what I help people do through my online course, FitzPro Foundations. So if you would like to check out that free workshop, there will be a link in the show notes, or you can go to anniemiller.co/workshop-register. To register now, and you can watch it in your own time. And again, that is free. While you are over on the site, I have consolidated all of my free resources for you at anniemiller.co/resources. And that includes everything for trainers, trainees, and entrepreneurs in one place. At this time, I would like to thank the sponsor of this podcast, Legion Athletics. They're the best. I have chosen not to support or use or be an ambassador for any supplement company since basically 2016, I believe it was, 2015 maybe, until Legion Athletics. I looked at other brands that I think have a pretty good standing in the science world, and that is why I love Legion Athletics. They have 100% formula transparency, which is legit. They don't just say they're backed by science, they're actually backed by science. So for every product on their site, you can see the scientific studies that back why they have chosen the dosages and the ingredients that they have. They have been clinically tested. And so that is something that really drew me to Legion. And then obviously the products are good. They taste good. They're naturally sweetened. They don't have all of the extra crap in them that you might see in other supplements. So they're my favorite. They also have 100% money back guarantee, so there is very little risk for you involved. They also have free shipping. You can use code Annie to save 20% on your first order, or if you are an existing customer and you already love Legion, then you can get double Legion reward points by using code Annie. So go to buylegion.com and use code Annie at checkout. So something that I have been asked about online is what I used to support or believe in with health and fitness that I no longer believe in or support now. And I think that's a really important question to ask and something to be open to as trainers or really in any area of life. I have done a podcast about this in the past and posted that to Instagram, but I used to be quite a bit of a movement elitist, I would call it. I've also mentioned that I think having more rigid beliefs in any instance when you are new at something is part of a natural process. We see this often in religion or when someone enters a new industry or philosophy in any area. We tend to start with a more rigid system or rigid beliefs, and then we expand our knowledge base, what we're exposed to, and we get more comfortable in that space. And then we are open to questions and gray area. And then beyond that gray area comes a new level of understanding where you have some firm beliefs, but you're also much more open to hearing other ideas and maybe questioning even those firm beliefs. So early in my strength and conditioning career, my philosophy was a mix of Starting Strength, Mark Ripto, Charles Poliquin, and Kelly Starrett. Those were kind of my go-to resources and or people. None of those resources or people are bad. It was more so that I took all of that information as gold, and I thought everyone needed to squat the same, deadlift the same, you know, neutral spine all day, every day, and we don't veer away from those basics. Now, I am still a fan of the basics, very much so. I still aggressively support squat, hinge, push, pull, carry. I even have that as a part of my apparel line, but I am much more open to squatting patterns, hinging patterns, pushing patterns, pulling patterns, and more unorthodox versions of those patterns. In the world of training glutes, we always hear that we need to train the glutes from different angles, right? In order to get optimal hypertrophy or increase in cross-sectional area of the glute max as well as the glute med, we need to hit it from different angles. That information is certainly not incorrect, and I ask you how it can be applied to other areas of the body. This is not unusual in bodybuilding. That's the whole point of bodybuilding. They hit a specific muscle group from as many angles as possible because we can stress different angles of the muscle, and that improves hypertrophy. It's one way to get increased muscle mass. People who made me question my movement elitism, again, that movement elitism is thinking that there's one way to either do strength and conditioning. There's one way to do an exercise. Everyone needs to fit these different angles when you're setting up for a deadlift, whatever it might be. It is not it's a fixed mindset, essentially, within movement. So the people that made me question that were Doc Jen Fit, and these are definitely going to be their IG handles because that's what I know them as, Knees Over Toes Guy, the shirtless dude from what used to be Move You, now I believe it's Wealth, and Ido Pertel were all of the people who kind of made me question my stance on things. I'm not saying that I support these people, those accounts that I just listed, forever and always. I am just saying that at some point in my career or another, these accounts and people specifically made me broaden my view of movement for strength and conditioning, applying it to what I did with my clients. So in today's episode, I want to explore things like bracing with a rounded spine, you know, spinal flexion, knees going over toes in any exercise, but mainly squatting patterns, strengthening the spinal erectors versus trying to protect them at all times, and exploring end ranges in general and under load, along with topics like the fact that everyone thinks that doing a single arm high pull is going to cause shoulder impingement, or that pulling behind the neck is bad, we shouldn't do it. So let's go ahead and start right now with the high pulls, because that is very popular. It's something that I use in my Built by Annie programming and get asked about a lot. Like I said, I program high pulls for my clients, and we should start by defining what impingement actually means. According to Oxford Languages, impingement in a medical sense means a painful condition caused by rubbing or pressure on a tendon, nerve, etc., by adjacent structures. That does not need to happen. What I just read, that definition, impingement, does not need to happen and should not be happening if performing a high pull in the absence of internal rotation of the humerus and scapular anterior lifting. I'm going to repeat that. Do a Goog if you need to look up what these are. It will make sense if you understand what they are. So impingement should not be happening during a high pull if performing a high pull in the absence of internal rotation of the humerus and scapular anterior tilting. Those things need to not be happening in order for impingement to not be happening in a high pull. If you are performing a high pull correctly, it will only strengthen your shoulder joint and the functionality of that joint. I truly believe that the stronger that we can be across different ranges of motion, joint by joint, the better. Yes? I think most people can agree with that statement. A high pull is just another vertical pull. If we're categorizing movement, which can really help us understand different movements and what their purposes are. as well as what muscle groups are being used. So if a high pull is just another vertical pull, we have pull-ups as a vertical pull in things like lat pull-downs. The high pull is simply in the opposite direction of those downward vertical pulling movements. It's an upward vertical pulling movement, yes? And that is largely why I program it for my clients, to balance the strength that we're building in those downward vertical pulling movements by adding this upward vertical pulling movement in the high pull. If performed correctly, a few things should happen with the high pull. And I think that's more so where things can go wrong, is in the execution of the movement. And of course, if a client is feeling pain with something, they don't want to continue doing a movement. So this is very important for people to grasp as trainees and as trainers. And Active Life has a few videos on this, I believe, or they post about it a lot. High pulls are something that Active Life uses in their movement. So go check out all of their resources as well. I'm sure they explain it better than I am going to. So there's a few that are very common in doing the high pull incorrectly. If done right, you have external rotation of the humerus at the shoulder and a posterior tilt of the scapula, thanks to your lower trap muscles. Okay, doing it correctly, we have external rotation at the humerus and posterior tilt of the scapula. Of course, if you have pain or pinching, that doesn't seem to go away with kind of playing with that movement pattern and your positioning or lowering the weight, please seek a professional in the physio realm or physical therapy. This is not medical advice. This episode is not medical advice. It is a simple discussion. It's a conversation on these topics. So again, if you are having pain, definitely seek a medical professional. If you are a coach and you have a client who has, you know, persisting pain with this movement, please refer them out, etc. If it was not clear by now, I am now much more for exploring unorthodox movements and movement patterns that I was previously not open to exploring. If you would have told me to do a Jefferson curl 5 years ago, I would have given you the middle finger. So let's dive into bracing with a neutral spine, spinal mobility, spinal flexion, and getting into some of those end ranges under load. A recent systemic review and meta-analysis was done in 2021 on strength training through end ranges versus static stretching for improving range of motion. That is basically for improving mobility. Active range of motion was tested. This is a heavy study to take in, as it covers studies from non-trained individuals to highly trained individuals under a very wide range of scenarios. Again, it's a systemic review and meta-analysis. I will link it in the show notes. So the conclusion was that there is no significant difference between the two, static stretching versus strength training through end ranges under load. And that's great. Some people might read that and be like, oh, there's no significant difference, but that is significant. That suggests that number one, we need far more research on the mobility benefits of training end ranges under load, and two, that we can possibly hit two birds with one stone in using loaded range of motion and strength training to improve someone's range of motion. Now, there are, of course, benefits that are individual to each approach, static stretching and training under load in your end ranges. This review was strictly looking at improved range of motion. So looking at the purpose of the meta-analysis is important, but it's a very interesting meta-analysis and systemic review. Covers a lot of information, and I think it's a really promising and, I guess, supportive study in literature of what we can do with strength training, which obviously I am a fan of. So we know that injuries can come from a lack of mobility, lack of flexibility, a strength and balance issue, and or load versus capacity issue. Now, we are only as mobile as we are flexible. Flexibility is the precursor to mobility, right? That's why flexibility and mobility screenings are very useful and important when working with clients. Someone can be very passively flexible, as in, you know, sitting in the splits, but they have very little control within those ranges. That's where mobility comes in, and thus they have a lack of mobility. They might be very flexible, but have a lack of control, lack of mobility. As the study above demonstrated, working on strength and control in end ranges, even under load, can be hugely beneficial. That also plays off of the idea that we can gain cross-sectional area or hypertrophy by accessing more motor units. And as we increase that range of motion, we can potentially access more of those motor units because new areas of the muscle are being called upon to work. Go science. In the study, they referenced several scenarios where fascicle length was increased via strength training through the end ranges. That is the key there. It's not just strength training. It's strength training through full range of motion that that person has, so within a person's capacity. That is the most important part about it, in my opinion. It seems, with the literature that we have so far, that to increase fascicle strength is less dependent on if time under tension is in the eccentric or concentric phases of movement. So eccentric being the lengthening and contracting phase, concentric being the shortening and contracting phase, and more important, that the muscle is loaded across the full range of motion. So it is less important, again, if it is happening, if that full range of motion is happening, or the time under tension is happening in the eccentric or the concentric, and just overall that you are working through a full range of motion. So that pretty much covers why I am pro-loading mobility and things like the ass to grass split squat from the knees over toes guy. Loading things like Cossack squats through your full range, or working on being able to drop all the way down to the ground in a Cossack squat with no regard for your spinal position. I am for these things. I am for things of this sort currently. Maybe I disagree with myself in another 5 to 10 years. I don't know. I also want to point out the individual anatomy of each person. Although I am for exploring end ranges, that's going to look very different for everyone, and that's okay. If someone has antiverted hips, they are likely not going to do an ass to grass Cossack squat, and that's okay. I am for exploring end ranges for you from an individual basis. Now let's segue into spines. This is a hot topic. I don't know if this will ever not be a hot topic, because yes, I do think that we should be exploring spinal mobility like anything else. Spines were made to move, and the spine is stabilized by muscles. From your deep core, like your quadratus lumborum, the QL, it's one of my favorite muscles in the body, to the superficial spinal erectors, we've got a lot going on from your cervical spine, which is the top portion in your neck, down to your hip girdle, which is kind of where all of this comes together, is the top of your iliac crest. But I mainly want to focus on the lumbar spine. Okay? If you don't have a image of that, or you are unfamiliar with what that is, it's going to be your low back, kind of from your rib cage to your hips. I used to think that we needed to find neutral spine and only brace in a neutral position, and that we could never break that position. Heaven forbid having a buffer zone, right? While I do still think that people need to be able to locate neutral spine and brace in that position, I also push us to question why someone should never get out of that position, especially when lifting. Absolutely, in something like a squat, the best force transfer and efficient path is going to be with a neutral spine and the weight over the center of the foot. I'm all for that. We can't really deny that. But when we broaden the scope a bit and look at things like a strongman competition, in something like the over-the-shoulder stone roll. I don't actually know what it's called, but you know when they pull the stone onto their lap and then they roll it up their body and over the shoulder, that's what I'm talking about. A person has to be able to brace and move outside of a neutral spine while remaining uninjured and doing that successfully. And they're moving heavy weight. This is not a light thing. So this is bracing with a heavy load with some spinal flexion. Yet they don't get injured. It's not an immediate injury by doing this. So if we want to strengthen the glutes and our shoulders from multiple directions and angles, why would we not want to do that with our core? There is data that suggests that prolonged flexion and extension of the spine while under compression does cause issues and injuries. within your discs. If you do not know who Stuart McGill is, do a Goog, look him up. You will understand all of this. But I am not promoting prolonged flexion and extension plus compression, and I want to make that very clear. I am simply exploring the idea of things like Jefferson curls and crossbody kettlebell deadlifts and strengthening the spinal erectors rather than being afraid of using them. Jefferson curls and crossbody deadlifts involve loaded flexion of the spine. With the crossbody deadlifts, we also have rotation involved. If our core knows nothing other than neutral and we fixate the spine, and the spine was made to move, is that really beneficial? Is that really injury preventative? I am not saying that, you know, we need to forget about the buffer zone when doing deadlifts. If you don't know what I'm talking about with the buffer zone, neutral spine is, in a sense, a buffer zone. So there is some flexion that can likely take place and be safe and not cause injury. That's going to be different from each person to each person, training age, and of course, how many deadlifts have been pulled at what weight with what level of spinal flexion. All of that is going to make a difference, but there is a buffer zone, a degree in each direction that still constitutes quote unquote neutral spine. All I am saying is that I think there's probably benefit in learning to move in different ranges of motion and different directions with intelligent loading or no loading. For years, certainly when I entered fitness, it was common to cue and tell people not to let their knees go over their toes in squats. I laugh at that now and how young this industry is sometimes. I used to tell people to lift their toes in their squats. Now we obviously know that planting the big toe and creating a wide base with your foot is how we are going to be able to get the highest force transfer in our squats and the highest stability for sure. Your knees going over your toes is going to be dependent on the stance of your squat, ankle and hip mobility, the length of your tibia to your femur to your torso, what has to happen in order to keep the weight over your midfoot, and generally speaking, it's not bad for your knees. There are cases, I am sure, where it is problematic, but for most generally healthy knees, it is fine. Trending now are cyclist squats or heel elevated narrow stance squats, often loaded in a goblet position or a front rack position where the weight is at the chest on the front of the body. As we know from doing Bulgarian split squats or step-ups with a vertical shin versus a positive shin angle favors the quads. So when the knee is going over the toe, when the shin is not vertical, a vertical shin tends to favor the glutes. If loaded correctly and performed on a proper tempo, strong quads and strong patellar tendons are only going to help the knees. Our knees are at the mercy of what surrounds them. Your ankles, your hips, all of the musculature involved. If I would have seen heel elevated split squat, or not heel elevated split squats, if I would have seen heel elevated squats years ago, I would have said that the person needed to work on their ankle mobility and that they're wasting their time, rather than asking, why might they be doing that? And simply analyzing the movement itself to see what the possible benefits are of doing that form of a squat. It's quite literally just targeting the quads. That's what a heel elevated squat does. It also allows the torso to be more upright, which is great for the pillar strength. Why not? I guess is my point. That's the question I encourage you to ask and myself to ask when we see a movement and have a jerk reaction like, that's a waste of time, that's stupid, that causes injury, why are they doing that? Maybe repeating something that you've heard from someone else, again, like the pulling behind the neck or high pulls cause impingement. But do they though? Why would they? How might they not cause impingement? Asking questions, staying curious. And to be clear, I am not referring to, you know, the gym fail videos where people are hanging by 18 bands in the cable machine or using something completely incorrectly. I'm just talking about an unorthodox version of a somewhat normal pattern that you may have poo-pooed in the past or maybe still think down upon now, think negatively of. How might it be applied? Why might there be a benefit? How might there be a benefit? Why would someone do it? Why would someone not do it? And why do you think what you think about a movement? More questions, more curiosity, less elitism. That is what I am encouraging after this episode. And again, maybe in 10 years, we know something else that we don't know now, and I disagree with something that I've said here today. That is highly likely. I reserve the right to disagree with myself on any topic, and that allows me to stay curious and move forward. So the Olympics got over just yesterday at the time of this recording, and it is one of my favorite times of the year to observe the human body and what it's capable of. If you watched, you know what I'm talking about. The body can be trained to do so many things and move in so many different ways. So let's be open to that, shall we? The Olympics was one of the first places in watching the spines move that made me question why I am so for neutral spine. Yes, it's a bit different in lifting, but still in general, why not strengthen the muscles that surround the spine from different angles, right? So I will shut up now. Episode is over. If you enjoyed this episode, please head over to iTunes and give the show 5 stars and a written review. Much appreciated. It is kind of how the podcast algorithm works, so you guys help me get in front of more people. I choose a review of the week and then a listener of the month as well. The winner of the listener of the month gets 50% off any non-membership program of mine, as well as a freebie from Frey Skincare. They're my go-to skincare company for the last 3 to 4 years now. You can always use code FDBA to save 15%. And if you are not on my main mailing list, get on it, because I have Annie's Weekly Wrap and Annie's Daily Dose. There are exclusive podcast listener discounts, and you can choose which one of those you want to subscribe to or subscribe to both. You can do that at AnnieMiller.co/news. Until next time, I am Annie Miller, and thank you so much for tuning into the FitzPro podcast.